Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Drew Deitch. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman. I realize I've been horrible at saying that, so I'm going to try and be better at that. And today we are talking all about Creepshow 2, which was released in 1987. So you still have some very 80s things going on in here. But Drew, you are the master of anthology movies on this podcast, apparently. Oh. So are you excited to talk about this one?
Oh, of course. I mean, first of all, thank you for bestowing me with that title. That's a title I will wear proudly. And yeah, I mean, I was on the first Creepshow, and I'm sure on there I've said that the first Creepshow is one of, if possibly my favorite horror movie of all time. And Creepshow 2, I mean, immediately I was like, well, I want to do all the George Romero connected Stephen King anthologies. And obviously Creepshow 2 is part of that, but Romero did not direct this time. He only has the screenwriting credit. And from what I could research, it looks like Stephen King, who wrote the script for the original one, this one he kind of basically wrote an outline, which would be like, here's the wraparound and the stories we do. And it was supposed to be five stories, but then they cut it down to three. And George Romero ended up writing the script. Either, you know, King was too busy or whatever. King does show up for a cameo in this, which I appreciate.
Yes.
But there's only one short story basis that I know of that's in Creepshow 2. And I believe you might have talked about it on your Skeleton Crew episode.
Yeah, The Raft is the one that I was familiar with the story, and I couldn't really figure out if the other two were original to this or if they were just stories from somewhere else and I haven't got into those books yet. But I feel like I'm pretty much caught up with the books that came out before this, and any that I do have left to read aren't short story compilations. Mm-hmm. So you always have those stories, though, that Stephen King wrote and maybe didn't publish in
exactly
collection form until later. So, you know, I'm not totally up to date on every single short story that Stephen King wrote, admittedly, which maybe not the best thing to admit on this podcast, but it's fine.
Oh, it's an ongoing process. You know, you continue to, it's part of the experiment of the show. But as far as I could tell from my research, they're not published short stories except for The Raft in any form. They may be ones he never published or unwritten ones, or it might have been completely original material made for the movie. But the other thing I wanted to say before we actually get into the story is George Romero, like I said, is not directing. This time it's directed by Michael Gornick, who was Romero's cinematographer for, I think, the majority of his films before this. And I think if I have to make like an overarching statement about Creepshow 2 as a sequel, I think the thing it misses the most that made the first Creepshow so iconic or memorable is that this doesn't really try to capture that kind of surreal comic book visual tone that the first one did. It's weirdly kind of more grounded.
Mm-hmm.
As far as its look goes. I mean, we get an animated wraparound, which it's like, hey, that's fun and cool and probably appealed to kids weirdly enough. But otherwise, I think that's one of my biggest concerns when it comes to Creepshow 2 is like, it doesn't have that Creepshow flavor to the visuals.
Yeah, it certainly felt like they were just telling these stories that felt actually more realistic in a sense than any of the ones in the first Creepshow. You know, you don't have a giant meteor coming down. I mean, you have the hitchhiker, which we'll get into because, you know, aspects of that story are certainly not that realistic. But, you know, the raft, there's something in the water. And with the first story, which is Old Chief Woodenhead, it's a little weird, but it's not so weird in comparison to pretty much anything we saw with the first Creepshow. And I do think they did get enough big names in this to sort of draw people in. But as far as the budget goes, they spent $3.5 million on it. It made $14 million at the box office. So it didn't totally fail. It still made some money, but it's not like it was some critical hit or anything by any means. So I think, you know, I agree with you that even though it had some of the same elements, I don't think tonally it really felt the same as Creepshow, because you do have the prologue and then you have interludes between each story and then the epilogue. So you really do get that wraparound. And when I was watching the animated parts of this, I was like, wow, this is so very, you know, 80s animation. And it was pretty choppy at times, which I didn't mind so much because, again, it's supposed to be like comic book form. And the way comic books are drawn, it's not like everything is one fluid motion. You sort of jump from panel to panel. And at times the animation felt like that, which is not great for animation. But I was like, all right, I will let this slide because it's, you know, 1987. I'm not going to expect it to look like Star Wars Rebels or something like that.
Yeah, I can only assume that they just didn't have the budget to kind of replicate the crazier live action comic book visuals. So they were like, well, we'll do this animated, you know, wraparound, and that will kind of better get across the comic book feel of the movie and the world. And the animated stuff is fine. Yeah, it's not the greatest quality, but it has a style unto itself, and it works for what the movie's trying to do. I think at this point, Romero had been producing the Tales from the Dark Side television series, and I think that started in 1983. And Creepshow 2 feels, as far as the live action stories, they feel a little more like TV episodes than the original one, in terms of, again, the direction and the visual flair. And the first one, Chief Woodenhead, it's good. It's not bad. Like, you got George Kennedy, and he gets to show up, and Holt McCallany, I think that's how you say his last name. I don't remember.
Yeah.
who people will recognize. He's been in like a million genre television shows.
Right. Most recently, Mindhunter, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yes. Yes. He's one of the leads on Mindhunter. And everybody's doing fine. I will say that the premises for each story, they feel appropriately like the old EC Comics Tales from the Crypt Vault of Horror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have that simplicity, and they are usually about kind of nasty people getting some sort of supernatural comeuppance. In the first one, it's, you know, there's an old kindly couple who runs a department store in a pretty much, you know, what's on its way to become a ghost town, and they get robbed by a bunch of young hoodlums who are going to escape and make their way off to LA. And I have to say, I have to assume that the Native American elements in this story would not probably pass today's standards.
Oh, geez, no. Especially with Holt McCallany playing one of them. It's like,
right. With his giant long-haired wig and all his talk about his beautiful hair. I'm like, who? But that I appreciate that from a kind of junky, pulpy stance. It's like, okay, this guy, he's got this really long hair. It's like, well, you know, he's getting scalped. Like, the second he makes a comment about his hair, it's like, oh, and this is about a vengeful Native American statue that comes to life and kills people. Yeah, scalping is going to happen. But I think in a way, Chief Woodenhead kind of sets the standard for the rest of the stories. It's kind of the, I don't want to say the weakest, but I'd say it's kind of the simplest in terms of its execution.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine. I guarantee anybody who's listening to this who has seen Creepshow 2 just wants us to talk about the raft. Because if there's one segment from this movie that people remember and talk about and kind of have a real fondness for, it's the raft.
Yeah, and that one, because of my familiarity with the story, I was like, okay, I know what to expect from this one. And when you see the teens go out to the raft, which is really just, you know, this wooden floating palette kind of in the middle of the lake there. You know, there's this big blob in the water that comes up and it literally looks like a wet, dirty tarp.
Yeah, it is. It is straight up like, I don't know if it's just a big, you know, it looks like a black garbage bag. Like the kind of material. And they were like, yeah, we'll put some like mossy stuff and some little bubbles on it.
But... and some water bottles, I think, were on it too. So, you know, they tried to kind of make it look oily and tar-like, but that just didn't come across every time. It was just moving in like one fluid motion. It like,
oh,
wasn't...
those shots are fantastic.
And wasn't, I say like fantastic altering with quotes. Its shape or anything. And I think, you know, when I was reading the short story, I got way more of like a Creature from the Black Lagoon vibe. To see this sort of just giant tarpy garbage bag looking blob, I was like, no, I don't really know how I feel about this. But, you know, you have sort of this iconic imagery in your head going into it if you've read the short story or something, and to then have it be that. And I actually watched some of the bonus features on this.
Oh, okay.
And someone was underneath it in like scuba diving gear and just sort of making sure it went in the right direction. So they were like navigating this big blob underneath the lake. And I just thought that was an interesting thing to find out, because I was like, did they like put some sort of motor under it or something, like, you know, from a boat or what? But then it was, you know, not moving all that fast. So someone actually physically being under there and navigating it kind of made a lot more sense. And then you have these shots of the people swimming, and at times it looks like they literally aren't going anywhere.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I think, almost classic horror movie silliness, where, you know, it's like somebody's running away in the woods and they keep tripping and falling, or it's like, oh, they never seem to extend the gap between them and the person chasing them. It's the same thing here, where it's like, yeah, you know, there's a couple shots where somebody's about to get up on the raft and the blob thing is like just about to get them, and you're like, I'm pretty sure like that take that they're showing, that blob hit them and they were like, okay, we got to take another, you know, do it again, and we're gonna do it from another angle so you can actually get up. But there's a couple moments in the raft that I think are pretty effective early on. I think it's before they get out to the raft. They see and they're like, oh, it looks like an oil slick. And there's some birds that get caught in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're flapping around. I'm like, oh, okay, that's a decent setup. And then, of course, anytime the oil slick actually attacks somebody, they actually get some pretty cool, gnarly little gore effect close-ups.
Yeah. I did like that aspect of it. You know, they really made it look creepy and disgusting when these people were being consumed by the oil pit, whatever you want to call it.
I think the biggest problem that I have with the raft isn't actually, I think kind of the hokey effects make it a little charming, but my biggest problem are the characters. Like, none of them are likable.
No, and not at all.
They are not very well acted either, so that doesn't help. But at the end of the day, written as they're written, there's nobody to root for. There's one kind of central character that you're like, he's the guy that seems to know what's going on, and, you know, he likes one of the girls and all this stuff. But then there is a horrific scene in which he assaults this poor girl. Like, there's no other way to read it. I mean, today, other than like, yeah, that is not cool, dude.
Right. And I was kind of like, yeah, nope, this is not going over well today. And
no.
You know, you mentioned one of those moments in Old Chief Woodenhead too, where just the portrayal of some of the characters would not go over well. And, you know, even though this is the late 80s, it's kind of like, was that really acceptable then? Because I don't think a lot of it was. It was just more part of the movie tropes of the time. And for this, and I think in the next story, you know, I was like, did they really just want to find a way to show boobs in this or something? Because well, I was just like, this is uncomfortable.
Oh, I completely agree. And there's two sides of my brain that look at this. It's one is like, okay, they're trying to channel these trashy, pulpy, very salacious comics. And that's what they're doing here. And part of me is like, well, that's the material. I don't agree with it, but that's the material. But then the other side of my brain is, well, could you guys have done like something that wasn't so, you know, if this came out today, it would be hashtag problematic.
Very much and, so.
And deservedly so. So there's a part of me that can distance myself because I'm like, okay, I understand the adaptation of the material. Like you're saying, it's like, yeah, it's in the 80s and maybe they should have known better, but trust me, I'm sure we can continue to look up movies that came up after, you know, far after this came out and had equal or even worse situations. But it is like it's totally uncomfortable. And again, feeds into this like, oh, even this one guy who he wasn't really likable, but at least he wasn't a jerk or an outright idiot or anything. Now he's doing this. Just kill all these kids. I don't care.
Yeah. What I found odd was that it took her so long to wake up because it's not like she was unconscious. She had fallen asleep.
Right.
And by the time she wakes up, all of that has already happened with the guy. And she's just now realizing that the thing is grabbing onto her face and her face is half covered by the time she wakes up. I was like, how did you not feel anything? Anything at all.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's silly. I mean, there's some cool, like, I think my favorite idea in The Raft is when the slick is directly under them and it's like pulsating between the cracks of the raft. I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty cool, that effect really works for me. So that moment, like they set that up and then of course she's falling asleep and immediately it's like, oh, her face is on one of those cracks. She's getting it.
And he put her there too. It's like, right? Really?
So it's like, it's you're doubly your fault. But then of course he has to swim away and there's the big chase sequence. And the thing that everybody comments on is that, you know, he gets right out of shore and the blob thing is right there. And he's just like, I beat you.
He has to gloat, and it's very much not over yet.
Yes, and this shot that I think is the thing that people remember the most from this movie, in which he's right there on the shore, and he's just like, I beat you. And then the blob thing just leaps out of the water and gets him. I remember seeing that as a kid and being like, wow, that is like incredible. I will always remember that. And then upon this revisit, the way that effect is done, and the you know, this is one of the unfortunate things about remastering some older movies, is you can clearly see how fake of an effect that this blob oil slick thing is. The idea is so aces and it clearly stuck with people. But I don't know, it's lost a little bit of its magic for me as that it once had when I was a kid.
Yeah, and that'll happen with movies, especially ones that maybe don't stand the test of time necessarily, because you grow up and you sort of know more about what goes on behind the scenes with movies, especially if you follow movies as much as you do. So then it's like, oh yeah, this kind of lost the magic for me. And, you know, that's totally fine. I think there's still, you know, good things you can pick out of each of these stories. And, you know, I actually like The Hitchhiker quite a bit. I don't know if it's quite as memorable, but I think it helped that when I was watching the bonus content, I watched a segment with Tom Wright, and he did all of his own stunts as The Hitchhiker. Yeah, so apparently he had started as a stuntman. He had done Broadway and done some other things before he really ended up getting roles on TV and everything, because he's another guy who has been in a ton of things. And he was like, yeah, you know, I was the one on top of the car having the branches hit me in the face. And they showed another segment too, where they were sort of putting his face on, you know, so that's all like plastered on his own face. And it just looks so brutal, that entire segment. And I think they did a really nice job with that. And obviously, when you have Tom Savini working on things like that, it's like, yep, you know what? These are going to look good.
Yeah, I think he was a consultant, and then also Howard Berger, I think, has a credit on the effects, and Howard Berger went on to make a K&B with Greg Nicotero and Robert Kurtzman. And for as much as The Raft, I think, is the one that people who know this movie most remember, The Hitchhiker, I think, is the most successful. It's a very simple kind of oft-told sort of horror story, something about a, you know, a phantom hitchhiker or something, but they tell it perfectly. Again, I think there's a little bit of an unwokeness with the lead character, you know, having this affair, and just, I don't know. I didn't ever feel that the script was ever trying to sympathize with her. It makes her out to be kind of pretty 100% awful. And so again, when she has this hit and run, it's only another reason that it's like, oh yeah, like we hate her and she's going to get her comeuppance. And because she has nobody to bounce dialogue off of, she's just talking to herself a whole bunch and creating make-believe conversations. And it's like, eh, this is a, okay. But when you talk about, you know, the stunt work, in The Hitchhiker, and then the effects, I love that every time we see the hitchhiker as he's, you know, returning to haunt this lady. I love that he has a catchphrase, "Thanks for the ride, lady." That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love that every time he shows up, he's a little more like decayed and grosser. I love that. That's and I think the effects work there really works.
And it's because not only is he doing his own stunts, but it's all practical. You know, they just keep piling on, you know, the prosthetic face and the makeup and all of the blood and gore and everything. And, you know, when he was talking about doing his own stunts after she runs him over and then he's hanging on the front of the car, he said what they actually did was they took the radiator out of the car and put it in the trunk so that he would have room to put his legs in the hood of the car. And he was literally hanging on to the front of the car that way.
Wow. I mean, I think all of that, like, and now, you know, with the information you're telling me, I only appreciate it more, because all of that, you know, stunt wise, like him, all the hits that he takes, all of him being on top of the car, all of this was already impressive. But knowing that that is an actor who is also doing the stunts, bravo. And I think that for as simple as The Hitchhiker is, I think it works the best because it is kind of based around kind of pure action filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
With this added horror element. And where it ends up, which I love, is that, you know, she's trying to race home to beat her husband getting home, and she knows she's not going to. So she's trying to come up with all these excuses as to why she wasn't home and why, you know, to cover the fact that she's cheating on him. And of course, when she gets home, she's like, the one time in his life and he's late, he's not home. And so she's just sitting in the garage. And when the hitchhiker comes up and they have that final reveal where just his entire face is melted away and it's just like a skull and this horrible long tongue that's mm-hmm. licking at her. And he's just like, thanks for the ride, lady. I'm like, this. Yeah, that's the moment that I feel comes closest to capturing kind of the over-the-top cartoony horror fun of the original film.
And I think that's why I probably like this one the best out of the three. Like you said, there are some good things about The Raft, but in the end, none of the characters are likable. And in this, you totally feel for the hitchhiker, because he was literally just standing there not doing anything. And here comes this rich lady in her Mercedes. She drops a cigarette, freaks out, and hits him, and then is like, oh, well, I'm just going to keep going. And then later down the line, she's like, well, you don't know that he's dead.
And, oh, yeah. She's trying to justify it to herself.
Yeah. And then she's like, oh, I can just tell him, or, you know, tell the car people I hit a tree. And it's like, there's blood all over your car. That's not going to fly.
It's a good point that you made, that like this might be the funniest segment too, which that's an element of Creepshow. Like it is knowingly humorous. And this whole thing where she ends up in an accident, mm-hmm. like, and she's like, oh, that's what it is. I ran off the road and this has all been a hallucination. That's why I can tell the car. It's like, yeah, you know, I hit a tree. It's just like, oh boy. For the few people that I think do know this movie and have an affinity for it, I think The Raft is the one that people remember the most because it has the biggest idea, it has the biggest effect, and it has kind of the biggest closing image with the blob, you know, eating the guy and then burping, you know, belching, which is fun. But for me, I agree. I think The Hitchhiker, as pretty kind of horror story 101 that it is, I think it's the most effective and the most fun.
And it gives us the Stephen King cameo.
Yes, it does. I like that a bunch of, I think to your note about her, it's important that she's a rich white woman and she's running over, obviously, a lower class person of color. I like that they have a scene where a bunch of other people stop, like, and Stephen King, who is cameoing as a trucker, you know, has to stop. And it's like, oh, yeah, like this is a very basic, but, you know, mindful commentary about class in some way, you know, in the ways that those kind of old Tales from the Crypt comics would. They had a morality. It was a very simple morality, but a morality nonetheless. And yeah, and I guess we should kind of talk about the story of the wraparound before.
Yeah.
Because the wraparound this time, I mean, I like in the original that it's really just kind of bookends, that while there's these animated segments where the comic book is flying around and flipping around in the wind, and that's how we start each one. This one, there, like you said, there are interludes in between each episode that are animated. And it's about this kid who loves the Creepshow magazine and is sent away for a Venus flytrap. And he's getting bullied by bullies. And of course, at the end of it, he has planted the Venus flytrap. It comes alive and eats the bullies. And it's like, yeah, so you laugh because it's like, yeah, it's, again, it's simple. It works. It's nothing, you know, it's not reinventing the wheel or anything, but it's fine. And it is certainly, when I saw this as a kid for the first time, the animated stuff was the stuff I remembered the most.
Right.
And I think I like that Tom Savini is playing the creep, our host, this time around. I know he's in the actual makeup in the prologue when it's live action, but I'm pretty sure he's also doing the voice as well.
I think someone else might have actually done the voice, but okay. I am not 100% sure on that. Let me see.
I'm not 100%
Joe
sure.
Joe Silver
that it's
did the voice.
Okay. Okay. So, but I do know that it is Savini in the makeup at the beginning.
Yeah. And that's sort of, you know, his forte there. So it was kind of nice to get to see him just be able to act a little bit, because I think a lot of people know him more for, you know, the prosthetic makeup that he does and his effects work and things like that, even though he has been in a few things here and there, if I'm not mistaken. But that really felt like it was something from the first movie. You know, you have the skeleton and it turns animated, and then you have the same with the creep here, and it's sort of the story with Billy, who is named after the kid from the first creep show too, which is weird, but it's not the same kid. So then you're like, okay, all right, where are we going with this?
Well, and even the specific creep show issue that he's got is the image of the last movie with Billy from the first one, Joe Hill, stabbing the voodoo doll. It's like, oh, okay. There's a sense of kind of winking continuity to this, and you get the sense that this is kind of a group of people making this movie and having fun. My only other note, and it's so bizarre, I love that this is how the movie ends, but it's so weird to me. This movie ends with a gigantic quote about comic books and media being blamed for violence. And I'm like, okay. Like, cool, I agree with your message, but I guess Creepshow 2 was the movie to end that message with.
Yeah, it's very weird because you can tell they're making statements about certain things, you know, with the class division in The Hitchhiker, bullies in, you know, the prologue, the epilogue, the interludes, everything like that. And there is some sort of message within these stories that they're good messages to portray on the screen, even if the execution isn't 100% there. And to then end it with that, you're like, how many messages are you trying to give us all at once?
I mean, I understand, because the original actual EC Comics were kind of ground zero for actual hearings about, are these, you know, should these be censored? Are these, you know, dangerous to children? All this kind of stuff. So it's not like, it's like, yeah, I appreciate and agree with the message. Like, it basically boils down to, like, if they put as much energy into, you know, parenting and caring for children that they do trying to find things to blame children for, then things would probably be better. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I agree with that. But, you know, I just watched Creepshow 2, and there was a lot of really troublesome stuff in this movie.
Right.
But sure, I'm glad you guys' heart is in the right place. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I do want to point out real quick here as we get into some final thoughts that there were still some little meta moments, you know, in Old Chief Woodenhead. There was a comic book rack, you know, the spinner rack, and it had Creepshow on it in the store. Then in The Hitchhiker, there was a giant copy of It sitting on like the headrest for the bed. And I was okay, that is very odd placement. I mean, one, I've never seen anyone put a book there. Like, it seemed like the bed had a really, really big headrest or something, and there was just like a foot of space to just put a bunch of things up there. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. I guess
definitely need a lot of space to put It up on there. So,
and I was like, okay, is this a hotel room or what? Because it seemed a little unclear, because it was when the lady was having the affair and she's paying the guy. So I was like, is this guy a prostitute who just stays in, you know, the same hotel all the time? Is this someone's apartment? Because it looked like hotel furniture, first off.
Right.
I was just so confused. I was like, does he always bring It with him when he's having affairs?
if he's like a gigolo, is it like, oh, I always like to have reading material afterwards, you know,
clients. Of all things.
Yeah, I'm like, It? Like, you're reading It? Like, it's like, you're going to be there a while.
Long wait times, apparently.
Creepshow 2, I don't think it's bad. Like, I think it's fine. Like, it's an okay anthology movie. And as far as horror anthology goes, it's probably one of the essential ones as far as its kind of profile and the people involved with it. As a sequel, I think it's a pretty poor sequel.
Yeah.
But on its own terms, it's not bad. Like, it's like three pretty decent episodes of something like Tales from the Crypt, which would eventually, you know, a couple years after this, actually become a TV show. So I think if you can judge it on that level, it's not a bad time.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 out of 5. And I mostly did that because once I found out how much Tom Wright did in The Hitchhiker, I was like, all right, we're going to give this a little bump because, you know, that's a lot of effort being put in on his part. Because at first you think, oh, okay, well, that's it. The Hitchhiker's dead, because I didn't know anything about this story. I wasn't expecting him to come back and come back and come back. And I was like, you know what? That was entertaining.
Yeah. So I give it an endorsement, but I think at this point it's kind of like for people who are just interested in, if you're interested in horror anthologies or anthology movies and you don't mind seeing one that's, it feels kind of like a compilation of pretty good TV episodes. Yeah, Creepshow 2. I can't go too wrong with it.
Yeah, it's fine. And if you just want to sit back and sort of have a good time, be uncomfortable a couple times, and, you know, just not really think too much about something, I would say this is definitely one of those things that you can watch and be like, wow, this is kind of ridiculous, but I'm kind of enjoying it.
Oh, yeah, 100% agree. I mean, if you want the best this kind of experience can offer, the first Creepshow, because even though that's pulling from the same inspiration, it doesn't feel as scuzzy as Creepshow 2. Like, and I think that has to do with art direction and just the kinds of stories they decided to tell, and the ways they told them. Creepshow 2 feels a little, not even a little, it feels a lot scuzzier, but maybe that's something that people will also find a kind of enjoyment through. But yeah, I'm very happy that we both, and we did not plan this before we started recording, like we both kind of settled on The Hitchhiker being the best entry. Like if you were only going to watch one entry from this, I would say watch The Hitchhiker.
Yeah, just go to like the last 30 minutes and you'll be good.
Yeah.
And at least they weren't too terribly long either, because you have those interludes, the prologue and the epilogue. You know, each one is probably about 20, 25 minutes, give or take. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that was nice that they didn't try to draw out these stories or anything like that. And, you know, Drew, as always, it's fun talking to you about these anthology series, and you are going to be back for another one soon.
Yep, I gotta fulfill my duty. What is pretty much Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, which is kind of the real Creepshow 3 in my book. So we'll see how they close out the trilogy. But yeah, I'm always stoked to talk to you, Deanna, and always stoked to be on Chat Cemetery.
And thank you for always being willing to come on. To our listeners, you can follow us at Chat Cemetery on Twitter and Instagram. We have a Patreon. There will be a support link if you are interested in supporting this podcast and my other podcast, Welcome to Geekdom. I just lumped them together because I did not want to manage two Patreons, to be honest with you. And as always, thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.